The content of this podcast is based on medical fact and evidence-based practice from credible authoritative sources, but is not a substitute for your institution's policies, procedures, common sense, or good judgment. The views and opinions are those of Eric Bauer and Flightbridge Ed in their entirety. This is the Flightbridge Ed Podcast, critical care and emergency medicine education for nurses and paramedics. Here's your host, Eric Bauer.
This is a Travis Barker production.
Soldier Boy, tell. Hey, I got this new damn for y'all called the Soldier Boy. You gotta punch, then crank back 3 times from left to right.
Everybody, Eric back with you. Today's podcast is going to be a brief podcast, and it's going to be titled The Rebuttal, based on Foam Frat's podcast released yesterday. That podcast is called Response Required, and that was in response to the podcast that I did called The 5 Hottest Questions in Mechanical Ventilation. It was released 2 or 3 weeks ago. Threw a few jokes Tyler's way. If you were at Fast 18, you know we did a ventilator battle royale that was really funny. It was a lot of fun. And one of the things that Tyler talks about in the podcast is that, you know, we challenge each other, and we're constantly challenging each other, and so I think this is great. So I'm going to play a little excerpt of his podcast.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Foam Frat Podcast. So this podcast was supposed to be with Cynthia and Sam Ireland, except Sam's sick, Cynthia's working, and I'm stuck by myself in a hotel up in Duluth, Minnesota after working a shift at Lifelink. So what I want to do is, instead of doing the 1 year anniversary Foam Frat podcast, I'm just going to pick on Eric Bauer a little bit, because he just did a podcast with Mike Herman from California in low flight service, and they talked about the 5 hot ventilator topics. And one of those just happened to be what me and Eric debated at Fast 18, and that was pressure versus volume.
All right, so you can go back and listen to that podcast again if you want to, and I encourage you to do so. Now let's listen to the 3 questions that he has for me.
All right, I think I'm going to end it there. If you have not listened to this podcast that I'm referring to, it's the Flightbridge Ed's 5 Hottest Questions in Mechanical Ventilation. Go listen to that, listen to this again, and then we're going to wait for Eric's rebuttal. Because the way Eric and I work and interact with each other is by constantly challenging each other's thought process. And so, Eric, I want to know how you're titrating your PEEP in a pressure mode using driving pressure. I want to know what your preferred mode is for the obstructive patient. And I want to know what you think about looking at pressure volume loops in a pressure mode. All right, thanks for listening, guys. I look forward to Eric's response, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, so you've heard it. So let's get to the questions. Number 1, driving pressure. Here's my thing on driving pressure. I think we can get very enamored with driving pressure. And driving pressure, based on the research and the studies, is only applicable in that ARDS patient. So that means, number 1, that we have to truly have an ARDS patient that has poor recruitment ability. Remember the podcast I did on pseudo-ARDS versus ARDS. ARDS is not what we've thought it to be. And it's all about, number 1, identifying that PaO2 FiO2 ratio. If it's less than 200, yeah, that's pretty significant. But if we immediately go with a high mean airway pressure, put them in inverse ID ratio, go to APRV if you got the Hamilton or a ventilator that can do that, and then re-titrate and calculate those numbers an hour later. And if you now have numbers that are exceeding 300, then that's not true ARDS, that's pseudo-ARDS. So I think we have to be very, very careful to use driving pressure, or the terminology of driving pressure, and really focusing on that in every single patient. Now, with that being said, we know driving pressure is the difference between PPLAT and your PEEP, and we know that there's 2 ways to lower that. We can lower that, number 1, by lowering our tidal volume, and we can lower that tidal volume down to 4 mils per kilo. Once we get down to 4 mils per kilo in an attempt to lower the plateau pressure, at that point, we also need to raise the PEEP. So basically, we need to bring those numbers together. And we know with a study that they outlined about 18 months ago that if ARDS patients, true ARDS patients, had a driving pressure less than 15, they had better outcomes. Now, here's the problem. Having a canned standard thought process on volume versus pressure in these patients, I think is very, very dangerous. And I think we have to be very careful in teaching that way as well. Every single patient that we come up to, we have to evaluate with some purity. We have to understand and be transitional in our thought process. Things are constantly changing with our patient care. So we have to look at things very, very specifically based on that patient. If this patient has a PPLAT that's greater than 30 and we lower their tidal volume down in a volume mode, pure volume mode. So remember, the ventilators on the market that are pure volume ventilators are the Revell. Hamilton T1 is not a volume ventilator. It is 100% pressure. So that ventilator gets pushed to the side in this thought process. So LTV 1200, LTV 1000, the Impact, the Envy, I mean, I could go on and on. All of those ventilators are volume and pressure, right? You can switch back and forth. So in that case, if you're in a volume mode and you lower your tidal volume down to 4 mL/kg, which we know is our bottom basement number, and at that point your PPLAT is still not lower than 30, then we can't do anything else with lowering our PPLAT. The last thing we can do, obviously, we want to make sure we can reposition our patients. We want to make sure that there's no other specific things with positioning and those types of things, obviously. But at that point, we have to switch to pressure ventilation. There's no other way around it. And then when we get into that situation, if their lung is that non-compliant, really driving pressure in my mindset is a secondary problem. We know that our PPLAT is greater than 30. So there's no way possible with using a volume method that we can get that driving pressure unless you're gonna bring that PEEP up to 15 or greater, right? If your PPLAT was right at 30 and you can bring your PEEP up to 15, 20, then yeah, absolutely, then we could stay in volume. But we know that if that PPLAT is greater than 30, we have to switch to pressure, because our lung is that non-compliant and we're getting excessive pressures at the alveolar level. So that's my big, big problem. Number one, is it ARDS? Is it truly ARDS? That's where the Hamilton T1, I think, is phenomenal. It has APRV, and you can immediately hit this patient hard with high mean airway pressures and try to significantly increase recruitment and see what happens from that point on. As far as my PEEP goes, his question on PEEP, how do I titrate PEEP based on driving pressure? Well, again, if I'm worrying about driving pressure, if I'm truly have a patient in front of me that I'm worrying about driving pressure, then I'm not really worried about titrating the PEEP in the standard methodology. I know that if I raise my PEEP, then I'm automatically narrowing that gradient between my PPLAT and my PEEP, resulting in a driving pressure of hopefully 15 or less. So honestly, I'm not really worried about that thought process in that type of patient. Now, in any other patient, absolutely. But again, it goes back to, am I even worrying about driving pressure in those other patients? And the answer is no. So I'm in the methodology of PEEP, I'm specifically using recruitment maneuvers, checking my PPLAT. If I'm truly trying to get the most optimal PEEP, then I'm going to stay in a volume mode. I'm going to check my PPLAT. I'm going to raise my PEEP up. And when I check my PPLAT, I'm going to document my static compliance. I'm going to keep raising my PEEP and reevaluating my PPLAT not to exceed 30, and want to consistently see that static compliance improve. If you want to listen to the podcast I did specifically on recruitment maneuvers, I recommend going back and listening to that and explaining or understanding what I'm talking about. Let's get to number two. One of the things I find that is ironic is that Tyler uses the Hamilton T1, which I think is a phenomenal vent. I honestly think it's the best vent on the market, just based on all the little things that it does. But we have to remember that it's 100% pressure driven. Every breath is pressure driven and it's volume targeted. And that's going to be based on how you set the ventilator up. But no matter what, that is a pressure driven ventilator. You can't check a PPLAT. The PPLAT is calculated. The only way to get a PPLAT in the Hamilton T1 is to turn the inspiratory flow all the way to zero. And all you're doing is essentially you're going to get the PIP. So every single patient that Tyler flies, he's in a pressure mode, 100%. So I don't really understand the thought process on why we're even worrying about the volume. You're using a ventilator that's 100% pressure driven no matter what. Now, if you're in PRVC, if you're in pressure control ventilation, just non-volume targeted, those are the same thought processes. One I think of as I'm actually manipulating the pressure to target a tidal volume that I've identified based on ideal body weight. In PRVC, the ventilator is manipulating the inspiratory pressure to target that volume that you set in the ventilator. Ventilator versus the person. And so one of the things that we've identified in the field through my time with our methods is that PRVC is probably not the best way to deliver a breath in the transport environment. There's a lot of variables that cause that ventilator to constantly fluctuate, and it seems like it never can really hit that perfect sweet spot, I should say. So you're always missing the mark. If you make any big changes, you manipulate the ventilator in any way, it really has a hard time relearning if you have a disconnection. So I think all in all, I would always pick pressure control, pure pressure control, and I would titrate and manipulate the pressure myself over PRVC. Let's go to the second part of question two, and that's which mode of ventilation and which manner of delivery would I pick for my obstructive patients? I think Tyler and I are 100% in agreement that a volume mode in most patients, again, I'm very leery in saying all, but I think in most patients, a volume mode is going to be the best option, and that's based on the high resistance problem. And you have limiting filling time. And so anytime you have a high amount of resistance, you have that narrowed airway, your secondary volume is going to be very, very low unless you raise that pressure up. And so where you get the benefit of volume is that you have a pure volume that the ventilator is going to deliver. So I think that there is really no argument as far as that goes. And then number three, the pressure volume loop. Here's my thought process on this is I've used four or five ventilators in my career. The first ventilator that I used was the LTV-1000. It actually had a monitor on it, and I could see my pressure volume loops. And I thought it was amazing. That's what I learned on. But I have, at this point in my career, 16, 17 years, that's the last ventilator, and that was in 2008 that I've even had that capability. And I think across the market, across the industry, now that the Hamilton has come out, and obviously we knew the Envy had that capability, but I think the market share is so, so small. And here's where I'm going to challenge Tyler is I think Tyler is brilliant, and I think that he understands medicine. Where I want him to start thinking of is the education side. Is it's one thing to teach a small group of people, and this isn't a negative, but I'll tell you, it's another thing to teach 1,500, 2,000, 10,000 people, because we have so many different people that are listening to these podcasts. We have very advanced, we have beginners, and I think we have to be very careful and look at what is the broad basis of our audience. I would argue that there is probably less than 5% out there that actually have pressure volume loops. So here's my thought process on this is any pressure volume loop in my mind is going to be a second or third trending option for me. That's not even something I think about. We shouldn't be targeting our manner of delivery based on the luxury of having a monitoring tool like a pressure volume loop. Obviously, I think it's phenomenal. I think it's a great way to evaluate our patients, to evaluate sedation. There's so many tools that you can use, but we just don't have that luxury in a lot of areas. Now, I think you fast forward 5 years from now, maybe the Hamilton T1 is going to dominate the market and the majority of everybody will have that luxury. And I think we can revisit that, but I think we have to teach based on what the standard is and teach on looking at your patient, looking at vital signs, looking at how is your patient responding to your therapies, and not so much look at the pressure volume loop. And that's just my overall broad perspective that I've gained. And I think the one person that has really challenged me to look at things that way is Alan Wolf. Is I used to teach at a very high level, and I remember some of the early meetings boy, he constantly had to bring me down and bring me down and bring me down to the lower levels and get the foundation out there and teach the foundation over and over and over and over. So that's what I want to challenge Tyler, is to think about it from the broad perspective. Think about it not from a small company's perspective, maybe where you have, you know, a handful of providers where you probably have more oversight, you have more medical direction involvement, you have better overall oversight from the education staff, etc. But when you get into these big environments, or now you think about our podcast being listened to worldwide, do many of our listeners have that capability? And I would say no. So we need to teach other ways, the standard ways of patient care. In the end, mechanical ventilation is fluid, it's transitional, it's ever-changing. Not any one patient can match the next, and we have to take great care in identifying specific needs based on the physiology and then apply that specific technique based on the best manner of delivery, mode, PEEP level, is this obstructive versus injury, etc. So I'm going to throw this back to Tyler. This is my rebuttal, and I will talk to you soon.
This has been a production of the Flight Bridge Ed Podcast, leading the way in pre-hospital critical care and emergency medicine education.